Starting now, everyone who registered will receive a link to the recording in an email later this afternoon. So today, for our Friday Forum webinar, we are delighted to welcome UVA alum Ross Baird. Ross Baird College 2007 developed the Village Capital concept for supporting entrepreneurs seeking a positive benefit on society in 2009 and has led the development of programs worldwide. Before launching Village Capital, he worked with First Light Ventures, a seed fund focused on impact investments, as well as several education-related startups, the Indian School Finance Company in Hyderabad, India, the National College Advising Corps in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and two ventures using technology to promote civic participation. He also currently teaches courses on social entrepreneurship and impact investing at the Batten School here at the University of Virginia. He also has a master's from the University of Oxford, where he was a Marshall and Truman Scholar. So here is Ross with Impact Investing, How to Align Your Career with Your Values.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very grateful to the wonderful people at Alumni Hall for inviting me. And I see a few friends of mine and the names on the main room. So hello. It is great to see you all. Hopefully this should be a fun and enjoyable session. So what I want to do over the next hour is have more of a conversation with all of you, or as much of a conversation as we have with me talking and you chatting in the chat box around a concept that a lot of people call impact investing. And there are so many different terms for what we're going to talk about today. You can talk about, some people talk about triple bottom line companies, companies that have social, environmental, and financial goals. Some people say social enterprises, entrepreneurial endeavors that are trying to do something positive for society. But I'm going to use the term impact investing to keep things simple, but basically talk today about what I do every day, which is work with businesses and build a business that is trying to be professionally successful, but also aligned with the things that I and my coworkers and my teammates care about and value. And I think to give background on who I am and my story, some of you I know, most of you I don't. I think for those of you, when I was at the University of Virginia, I don't know that entrepreneurship is something I would have predicted I would go into. And I think that's because of a real dichotomy that we have in society. I think most people out there have what I call two-pocket thinking. They say, okay, there are a world of jobs out there, like consulting firms, investment banks, Fortune 500 companies, where you show up and your job is to make as much money as possible, have as much success as possible, take care of your family, be financially secure, have the life that you want to have, and that's great, and that's wonderful, and there's nothing wrong with being successful. And there's a whole another world out there in careers where, I don't know, maybe you work for a nonprofit, or you work for the government, or you work run for office, or work at a hospital, or teach, or do something in what I would call the helping professions. You do something good for society. And the drawbacks of saying, okay, all the professional success is here in this pocket, and all the things that I can do that are good are here in this pocket, is a lot of people say these don't merge. So you can go have a great career and have financial security for your family in banking, but you're going to be accused of selling your soul to the devil every time you talk to your friends from the university who are teachers or in government or whatever. Or you can go work in government or in a nonprofit and feel great about what you do, but worry about money and not really understand what success looks like for you. And I think that the biggest shift in our global economy that is happening and has happened over the last decade and is going to happen is people increasingly all across the spectrum, people who are investing money, people who are starting companies, people who are working for companies, this idea of doing good over here and being professionally successful over here is more and more emerging. It is really, really important to people that businesses reflect the things that they value, and they're not a whole, this whole separate world over here. And I don't think I would have predicted for a million years when I was at the university that this is the world I'm in, but I'm in it, and there are a lot of people around the world who are in it, and I absolutely love what I do, and I wanted to share where I came from, but give a little bit of my background beforehand. So let me, all of you know how to use the raise hand function. Everyone just give it a try. It's going to be more interactive. Raise your hand if you can. Push the raise hand function. Got it? Lots of raised hands. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Unraise your hand. Excellent. We're all on the same page. So how many of you, and let's go back to this two-pocket thinking for a second. So we have professional business success in one hand, and we have do good, help other people, nonprofit, government, education, health, whatever in the other hand. How many of you would identify your current job in the business success pocket? Raise your hand. All right, I promise not to tell your employer, but how many of you are feeling emotionally, spiritually, psychologically happy about what you do every day, if you're working in the business world? Okay, that's great. Some people are really happy. Some people, I'm seeing fewer raised hands on this one. And I talked to people, I talked to probably four or five people over email or phone or whatever every day, or whenever I go to an event, the events that we have with our entrepreneurs on some of you are full of people who say, I'm working at XYZ consulting firm and it's good money, but man, I really just don't feel that much purpose in what I do. Okay, so how many of you work in the, what I would say, the doing good for society world, the nonprofit, your teacher, work for a nonprofit, work in the government, et cetera? And how many of you feel like you are leaving some definition of professional success on the table? You're making some kind of compromise to do this, and you have to at Christmas justify to your family, oh, I promise, you know, I'm doing really good stuff, but I promise, like, I'm not going hungry. Okay, so this is pretty common. I think that most people, if the raised hands are any guide, most of you are feeling some one or the other side of this two-pocket thinking. And I think that most of the world does, and most of the world wants it to change. So what we're going to do is talk about what that means. I have this New Yorker cartoon that says a guy sitting in a post-apocalyptic world saying, yes, the planet got destroyed, but for a beautiful moment in time, we created a lot of value for shareholders. And I'm going to get a little theoretical here. There is a professor at Darden named Ed Freeman who, how many of you have heard of or took a class with Ed Freeman? So Ed Freeman has this concept called the theory of stakeholder value. And this cartoon, I think, is explicitly addressing this kind of two-pocket thinking. So Milton Friedman, different, no relation to Ed Freeman, is one of the fathers of modern economics. And he says there's a theory of shareholder value. If you are a CEO or an employee at a company or an investor, your primary job is to maximize financial value for your shareholders. And that's true. And if I have my retirement funds invested in a public company, I want the CEO to be a good fiduciary of those funds. And Ed Freeman, to oversimplify 25 years of Ed Freeman's work, says, listen, that is true, And the way that we measure the value of a company or what a company is worth is far more than what the quarterly stock prices say. How do these people treat their employees? Do employees stay there for 18 months and burn out, or do employees stay there for 50 years? How does this company interact with its community, environment, et cetera? There are a whole number of things that go into the values of a company that are really, really important for that company's financial value. And so this cartoon says if we don't pay attention to the values that go into business and the kinds of things beyond just quarterly stock earnings that our business is trying to achieve, we end up with a world where no stock is worth anything, and we have this funny cartoon that I like. This is the consequence to our world if we don't get this idea of integrating our values into business right. So what I want to do is this term that I'm going to use just as a common language for our time together today is impact investment. Impact investment is a business, and by business I mean a for-profit business. There's a lot of great innovation going on in the foundation and nonprofit world, and that is worth talking about. We can talk about that in Q&A. That's not what I'm going to talk about in this presentation. It could be a whole nother separate hour. But for this presentation, I got a for-profit business that seeks financial success. If you're investing, you get more money out than you put in. If you work for the company, you get paid a salary, benefits, bonus. This is a financially successful, sustainable, profitable business. And two, a positive impact on society beyond financial returns. And I would say an intentional positive impact. You know the impact that you're trying to make, whether it's on outcome in education, health, environment, and you're able to measure it, and you're able to tell just like whether you're achieving the financial results you want, whether you're achieving the social results that you want. And I could get very theoretical, but I'm going to start. I found it when I explain what I do, and I have a really difficult time over Thanksgiving or Christmas just explaining to my family what I do. But I've found that the most helpful way to start is actually talking through specific businesses and then getting a bit more 30,000 feet. So I want to talk through two businesses that we are involved in that my firm, and I'll tell you a bit more about what we do later, my firm is involved in and invested in, and where they are and where they are now and what the company looks like. So the first is a company called Kickboard, and my firm Village Capital invested in Kickboard 4 years ago. It's a company out of New Orleans. I have these little tools here. So this is Jen. Jen is the CEO of Kickboard today. She's the founder of the company. She is a Teach for America alum. I don't know if any of you are in Teach for America or Peace Corps or Venture for America or one of these really, really great fellowship programs. So Jen's in Teach for America, and she's a teacher, and she's also a software coder. And she, while teaching, has this idea of, look, every single day I am having students fill out Scantrons with number 2 pencils. How many of you remember Scantrons from school? Thanks for the raised hands. Excellent. A lot of Scantrons. I did too. Every day I am collecting Scantrons and taking tests, and I look out and I'm teaching in New Orleans and I see 40 kids. And I don't really know whether this kid who has a B plus in math, I don't really know if he's kind of missing everything or if he's getting all the addition, subtraction, and multiplication right, but missing the division questions. And so what I am trying to do, says Jen, is figure out if I can build a dashboard that allows me to analyze how students are doing and get very, very granular detail on what this is like. So that way, if I see this kid right here, and I know that he's doing really great in addition, subtraction, multiplication, and not getting division, I know that we're talking about division in class. I can look right at him and ask him questions in class, or I can pull him aside for some extra help. I know where really all of my students are, so it's almost like I can provide individualized in-class teaching to everybody. And how many of you have seen the movie Moneyball? Or read the book? So the theory behind what Kickboard is trying to do as a business is a lot like the idea in Moneyball and baseball, where for a very long time, baseball scouts, the basic theme of the Moneyball movie and book is baseball scouts would look at people play and would kind of say, that guy looks like a catcher, or that guy looks like a pitcher, and they'd guess how things were doing, but wouldn't really have great data-driven evidence on what and how to scout and improve specific players. And Kickboard says the same thing. Teachers every day have so many little data points around how students are doing and how to improve their performance, and we're just not collecting it, we're not using it. So Kickboard is a software platform that Jen designed, and she left her school to turn this into a company. And if you're a teacher, you have this software platform, you can merge it with your Scantrons or your Excel sheets or however you keep track of how things are doing. And you can have really, really incredible data that helps you provide better instruction, improve student performance, and fun. And so Kickboard started, we were their first investor. They're a business. They sell software to schools the same way Blackboard, which we're using now, sells software to the University of Virginia. And Kickboard originally started selling to charter schools in New Orleans. Teach for America was an early customer. KIPP, which is a really well-known brand of charter schools, was an early customer. And they now are in over 30 states. They serve 25,000 kids in their first 3 years. They've raised well over $3 million. The company's financials are looking great. They're employing 50 people across the country. And it's a long way to go before we can call this a successful business, but they're really on their way. And if I showed you the financials and the budget of Kickboard, you would say that's a really great business without knowing what the impact is. And Kickboard is a great example of a company that is only successful if they create a positive impact on society. So of course, if you're Kickboard and you're selling to schools, they'll want to know, how is this improving student performance? How is this saving teachers time? Why are we going to spend money on this? And the Kickboard does a great job of tracking the impact that they're having, and they have really good answers. So unlike much of the nonprofit world, where a school might get granted this great software package that they might never use because the schools need to pay for Kickboard, they're actually really demanding about whether Kickboard's going to help make education better. So this is an example where I think market forces are driving better educational outcomes and building a really good business. The second business I want to talk about is a company called MCOPA. And the firm that I worked for before starting Village Capital was one of the first investors in MCOPA. And they make pay-as-you-go home energy systems. How many of you have spent any time in East Africa? So there are a couple hundred million people in East Africa that have no connection to the electricity grid. And nearly all of them make below $2 a day. And there have been, over the last 20 years, a bunch of entrepreneurs that have come up with home solar energy systems. And the problem is these systems, you could put them on your hut in rural Kenya and it could power lights, radio, et cetera, and they cost $150, and if you make $2 a day, you're not really ever going to be able to save up enough money to buy one of these systems. MCOPA is a bit different. They sell home energy systems, but they don't sell them for $150 up front. People rent to own their home energy system. So how many of you, and just type in your chat box, I want you to guess what percentage of financial transactions in Kenya are done over mobile phones. All right. We've got, usually people guess like 10% or less, but it, depending on how you keep track of it, it's between 70 and 80%. Electricity isn't everywhere in Kenya, but mobile phones are everywhere in Tanzania, all across East Africa. And there's a software platform called M-Pesa that most people in the country are signed up for. And it's mobile money is something that people use all the time. And so went MCOPA, and we're also invested in another company called Simpa. What MCOPA and Simpa and other companies like this are doing is they attach this meter to what would be a solar panel on your roof and a power strip that might have a radio or a light attached. And you type in a code every time, if you're a customer, you want to use the electricity. And you might say, I want to pay 15 cents for 3 hours of electricity. And MCOPA has a remote kill switch that will turn the electricity on or off, but you basically pay for the electricity as you go. And after a year and a half or however long it takes for you to own the system, MCOPA automatically will disable the kill switch, and you can own the home solar energy system for as long as you keep it in good shape. And so MCOPA seems like a great innovation. You say, how is this a great company? It seems like a really cool nonprofit idea. MCOPA has raised over $30 million from real major strategic investors. And the thing that I think is most amazing about MCOPA is if they keep growing like they are now, within the next year or two, they are going to power more homes than the government of Kenya. So they are actually going to be the largest electricity utility, if they were a utility, in Kenya, and they have families paying to own these systems. So it is a great company. It is rapidly growing. It is solving a major problem. If you ask MCOPA what impact they're making, they can track up to the minute how many homes they are powering and how many minutes and seconds of renewable energy they've delivered, because a core metric of how they manage the business is through this box right here. So it is another example of a great company that is they employ over 1,000 people, and it's whether you care about climate and renewable energy or whether you care about getting affordable basic services to the poor in Kenya, they're solving a real problem. So I will stop there, and we're going to have a couple of rounds for questions, but this is now that we've gone through the general topic and a couple of examples, I would stop there, and I would love to answer questions you have either about Kickboard or MCOPA or the general concept. Just feel free to type them into the box right here.
I see some people typing.
All righty. Yeah, I see it too. So Kickboard's data is all teacher entered. You, as a teacher, sign up for Kickboard, and Kickboard has a back-end database, and as you can maybe imagine, data security and privacy concerns are always top of mind for schools, but Kickboard is pretty rigorous about that. But you, as a teacher, enter your data, and some teachers do it manually. What Kickboard can do, though, is what you could do is create a Scantron, code each of the answers to the Kickboard database, and then when you scan the student's answers, it will automatically populate the spreadsheet. So basically what they do is figure out how you're already tracking what the students are doing and fill in and measure what you can see. All right. Next question, this is a great question. Are there any types of businesses that are not startups and are perhaps changing the face of their businesses but are perhaps more stable to join? That is an excellent question. There is a movement that is called B corporations, and B corporations are like LEED certification for business. I'll type this out here in the box. You can see it. And the name of the website is B Lab. And B Corporations are like LEED certification for business. So if you're a B Corporation, you can, you submit your company's impact metrics, and it's a range of things. Like if you're producing something, what's the environmental impact of your supply chain? For everybody, how do you pay your workers? Do you have maternity leave benefits, et cetera? And you get a score. And if you, just like LEED, you can have LEED Platinum, Gold, Silver. If you score over 80, you can be a certified B Corporation, but you can score up to 200, and your score is transparent. And there are a number of companies that I'm sure you've heard of that have voluntarily opted in to be B Corporations. So Patagonia is one, New Belgium Brewing is one, Etsy, the online website, is one, Ben & Jerry's. If you want to go to B Corporation, it's bcorporation.net. You can see, and these are a lot of these are really big companies that employ thousands of people that have voluntarily opened up their impact metrics, and you can see what their scores are. And on bcorporation.net, they have a job board for people who want to work for a B Corporation, among other things. So that is a great question. I can talk more about that at the next Q&A, but I'm going to go to a couple of these. How do you go about making investment decisions into one social business and not into another? So this is just Ross talking. There's a phrase in the investment world, when you've met one venture investor, you've met one venture investor. Everyone has their own way of looking at it. One thing that I think is really important is that the impact of the business has to be a core value or core to the business model. It can't just be a marketing tool. So for example, there are a lot of businesses that say X percent of our revenue or our profit are going to go to Y good cause, or if you buy one, you know, if you buy one thing and you're a relatively well-educated consumer in the U.S., we will give the same one of these things to somebody in an emerging market. And to me, that is less direct impact than Kickboard, where the revenue for Kickboard comes from schools and they're only going to pay if the impact, which is better outcomes for kids, is being reached. Or MCOPA, if MCOPA does a bad job at delivering electricity, households will stop paying and MCOPA will go out of business. And I think that if the impact is core to the business model versus marketing, that is really, really important to me. And there are a number of ways you can measure that, but that's probably the best way to look at it. And another thing is how many of you like New Belgium beer, Fat Tire, Ranger? If you like beer and you like this conversation, you should drink New Belgium. They are 100% employee-owned. There are janitors who work at New Belgium and receptionists who are going to work for the company for 50 years and retire and not have to worry about their families. And that, I can't say that for most service industry jobs in the world. And New Belgium, their core competitive advantage over if you ask them that, I've been on a tour with the CEO of their brewery, their core competitive advantage over anybody, ranging from Blue Moon to whatever, microbrewery, whatever, is that they produce really great quality beer by people who are incredibly motivated and will stay at New Belgium for their entire career, because everyone who works there for a certain period of time is an owner of the company, and people are invested in the company's success. And so that is another way to think about impact, is the impact that you have on workforce practices, and are you providing janitors and receptionists the chance to really, really be financially successful? If the company is successful, or are you, do you have a whole pool of your population that's not going to realize upside if they do a great job? And like the janitors and receptionists at New Belgium are like the best and most motivated frontline workers you'll ever see, and the CEO says this is what makes us better than any other brewery. So that's another, I mean, impact on your workforce is different, but it's related. I mean, the CEO of New Belgium would say, we don't do this because it's a nice thing to do, though. We like doing the nice thing. We do this because treating everyone in the company the right way and having everyone in the company share in the financial upside of the business means that every single person in every single role is the best in the brewing industry, and that makes us really, really successful, and that's a massively financially successful business. So how do I go about making investment decisions? I look at the impact, and I see how closely it's tied to business success is the short answer. What kind of initial startup funds did Kickboard require? Quick question. Yeah, we invested $100,000 in them 5 years ago, and they've now raised about $7 million. They've recently closed another funding round in the last 5 years. How do we identify demands that need to be addressed? I think that's another question that if you are interested, either as an investor or as a potential founder of a company or as someone who's looking for a place to work, that's really personal. That's what you value. And so for me, there are two big problems that the companies we work with try and solve. And Kickboard is an example of one, and Imcope is an example of another. I would say access to opportunity for the underserved, primarily through health, education, and financial services, financial inclusion is one, and two, resource sustainability of the planet. So we do a lot in energy, agriculture, and water, basically making sure our economy can sustain itself. And my great friend, Mary Tanner Knoll, hi, Mary Tanner, I know you can't say hi back, but hello, says, what financial returns has your firm realized from its investment in these companies in the past few years? That is an excellent question, and obviously the question any investor would ask. This sounds great, and how do I know I'm going to get my money back? It's really early to tell. I mean, the average, so New Belgium's original investors did really, really, really well financially, and it took them about 15 years to get there. It takes a long time to build great companies. Without going into too much wonky detail, if you had invested in Village Capital's pool of capital 4 years ago, and if there are any lawyers here, I'm certainly not predicting or guaranteeing any future performance, but you would have gotten about 25% of your initial capital back in the past 4 years. And there are still, of the 40 investments we've made, there are only three that are out of business. So there are still 30 companies out there that are growing. Some of them are doing great. Some of them are doing not so great. But as an example, Kickboard, our firm, still owns a percentage in, but we haven't, the company hasn't been acquired, it hasn't sold shares. We own a percentage of Kickboard on paper that hasn't turned into cash yet. Imcopa, again, initial investors in Imcopa have received what looks like on paper a huge jump in investment. They haven't received cash back yet, but it's looking like both of those are really on the track that we were hoping they would be. So to date, you would have gotten a quarter of your money back if you invested in us, but there's we hope the potential for a lot more where that came from. So that would probably rule out Patagonia and New Belgium. So I would say, for just to clarify, for my investment definition of impact tied to business success, I would say that Patagonia and New Belgium both have excellent, excellent workforce practices. Up the way that they pay and motivate and incentivize all employees top to bottom is excellent, and they would both say that the reason why they've been incredibly financially successful in making the jacket that I wear right now or in making the beer that I would have with you guys if we were in person together is because they have better teams than their competitors because they treat their teams better. So I think that integrating values into the operation of the business is really, really critical. So two more questions I'm going to address really quickly. Two more questions I asked really, really quickly. number one, how does equity stake compare to private non-social impact investments? It totally depends on the investor, but I would say that there are over 300 funds that are self-described impact investors, and I would say probably 275 of them act very, very similarly to private non-impact investors in terms of commercial discipline, equity stake they take, et cetera. They just have really tight screens on the companies that they consider. And Kent, it's good to see you, Kent. How do you articulate total ROI to your investors? Guessing includes measurements beyond dollar return. Yes, I mean, we have basic financial reporting metrics. We also have a quarterly dashboard on social impact metrics that we send to investors. And if you want, I'll give all of you my email address at the end of this. If you're interested in seeing that from us, just send me an email and I can send you ours. And then finally, Matt, too, is Village Capital open to investors? The SEC would not let me answer that question, but if you want to send me an email at the end of this call, I would be happy to give you an update offline. So I want to talk about a couple of big trends. So it seems like impact investing is great, and I when I talk to people about this, people typically say, oh, this is great, and is this some really random, weird thing that a few weirdos like you, Ross, do? And I would say 10 years ago, probably the answer is yes, but now, I mean, just in the last year, JP Morgan released a report where $17 billion was invested over the last year in companies that have intentional positive social impact. There are a few reasons for this. I'm going to go through this really quickly, and we can talk about this in the Q&A. But number one, massive pent-up demand at the BOP, which is a phrase coined at the University of Michigan. I'm pandering to Kent here. For base of the pyramid, which is people making below $3,000 a year. The companies like Imcopa are examples of this, that are providing high-quality goods and services at affordable prices to low-income people. Investor demand, people who have cash, and this is you and me, this is ultra-high net worth people, this is university endowments, these are pension funds, like TIAA CREF now has a box where you can check if they manage your pension fund. You can have between 1 and 100% of your pension fund invested in values-aligned companies. And this is just something I've seen even the last 2 years. There's more and more actual cash from asset owners asking for impact investments. And then the third, governments are really interested in this because there is a need to do more with less, with government budgets really tight anywhere. So the G7, because Russia got booted, but they originally, earlier this year, the G8 declared that impact investing was a national priority in each of the 8 countries and set up a national task force. Then when Russia left the G8, the G7 redeclared that impact investing was a national priority. And so there were national advisory boards and policy recommendations and changes in the White House and Treasury, et cetera, making various subsets of impact investing more easy. And if you're interested in that, we can talk more about that policy angle in the Q&A. But this is something that governments are really exploring. And it's a bipartisan issue. I think Republicans like it because it takes a more free market approach to solving social problems, and Democrats like it because it gets business people talking about doing good things for society. So it's a generally bipartisan popular issue in government. Another big trend is, and Jason, thanks for the question. I'll get to that in a question session in a little bit. This is related to asset holding, but if you look at the things that drive an economy, there are people who invest in companies and people who work in companies. And when I talk about impact investing to people over the age of about 40, I would say the understanding of it is mixed. When I talk to people under the age of 40, like 99% of people say, yes, that is exactly what I want. I want to work at a place that reflects the things I care about, and I want to make sure that I have a stable job. And that to me is the most important thing. And so three data points just to talk about how this general concept that we're calling impact investing is becoming more mainstream. Number one, The World Economic Forum estimates in the next year that people under the age of 40 are going to inherit a collective $41 trillion. And so the deciders over where money goes are increasingly young people who care more about integrating business and social good. Second, The Economist did a survey of graduates from the top 10 business schools, including Darden, and asked them what industry they wanted to go in, investment banking, consulting, private equity, et cetera. And impact investing was one of the top five choices of all MBA grads across the country last year. And then third, this is a Deloitte survey of just millennials anywhere, and they asked the question, what is the primary purpose of business? And the number one answer from millennials is to improve society more than generate profit. So if you are looking to employ the best people, or if you're looking to raise money, or if you're looking to manage money, being able to do this well, integrate profit and social good, is I think going to be increasingly critical. These are just a few sectors that we're seeing a lot of money going into at the macro level. I talked about that the $17 billion. Housing, water, health, education, financial services. That's just a quick slide, and we can go back in more detail. A bit background on what my firm does. So I started Village Capital 5 years ago. I started a couple of education ventures coming out of the university, and I worked for an investment firm that invested in one of my education companies. And what I saw, both being an entrepreneur as well as being an investor, there are thousands of entrepreneurs out there, and I was one of them, right? I was undergrad, where I knew that this idea of starting a business that had a social outcome was possible, but I didn't know where to go, who to partner with, who to raise money from, et cetera. And then working for an investment firm, for a guy, an entrepreneur in Atlanta that wanted to invest in businesses like the ones that we've talked about, it's really actually harder than you think. If you say tomorrow, I've got cash and I want to invest it in these great businesses, it's really hard to find them. And building a system that provides opportunity for entrepreneurs like me, you know, graduating from UVA, and also makes impact investing accessible to investors was the basic idea behind Village Capital. So the name came from the academical village at the University of Virginia. And the way that we work is we build programs around specific sectors. So we're going to launch in 2 weeks in Washington, D.C., a program around education companies like Kickboard in the U.S. And if you're in D.C., I encourage you to come. We run these programs. And at the end of the program, the entrepreneurs rank each other. So this up here is a program we ran in India. This is a program we ran in Brazil. The programs have people structure financials, set hiring plans to build a team. They meet with investors. So this guy right here is one of the top angel investors in Brazil, and he's meeting with three of our Brazilian entrepreneurs, learning how to raise money. At the end, we ourselves invest money in companies, and the entrepreneurs themselves actually pick. So all of these Brazilian entrepreneurs rated each other, and the top-ranked companies got an investment commitment from us. And so over the last 5 years, we've worked with 500 entrepreneurs through programs like these in a range of cities. You can see all the places we've been active. We've invested $2 million in 40 companies. Those companies have gone on to raise $100 million in follow-on. And we're partnering with foundations you might have heard of, like Rockefeller, big business like eBay, MasterCard, Pearson, and then New Belgium. The New Belgium Foundation is actually a co-investor with us, and their goal is to seed and invest in more businesses like New Belgium. So it's great to see, as a lot of these businesses reach what I would say is really effective integration of profit and social good, a lot of these businesses are investing in other businesses. So I'm going to run through really quickly ways that you can get involved, and then we'll stop for questions. But one is start a company. If you have an idea for a business, there are a range of organizations that work with things like that. We are one of them. You can go visit our website and see what we do, or you can send me an email. Up Global is another. They run a series of events called Startup Weekends, which you can find really anywhere. There's a Startup Weekend in Charlottesville every spring. And then depending on where you live, there are co-working spaces, events, et cetera. So in DC where I live, there's a group called the Impact Hub, which is a co-working space for businesses that have an element of social good, and I work out of that. That's where our offices are. There's another place called 1776 that's a startup hub. If you're in Chicago, there's a place called 1871. It really depends on where you are, what the local organizations are. You can send me an email or in the question say, hey, well, how do I do this in New Orleans or wherever you might be? So second way to get involved is to join a company. If you're interested in joining an investment firm or joining a startup that is doing the kinds of things that we talked about, one specific opportunity that I want to bring up is an organization that I started with a couple of other impact investment firms called Impact Business Leaders. And it's essentially a week-long executive MBA-like program that does what I did here over the course of a week and brings you up to speed on what this industry is like, how investors work, how companies work, and then places you for 6 to 12 months with a company with the ultimate goal that you'll be hired at the end of that placement. So this week-long training is in March at Darden, Batten School, and McIntyre also partnering with the program. And then Impact Business Leaders works to place you with a job. And over the past 4 years, since we've run different iterations of this program, 100% of people who've gone through have been placed. We can't guarantee a placement, but we can guarantee a great network. So this is one very easy on-ramp, if this is interesting to you. ImpactBusinessLeaders.com is their website. Jonathan is the name of the guy that you would email to learn more about. I put his email address here. Email him and say, Ross from UVA sent me, if this is something that's interesting after you learn more about it. So that is one. Other tips for your career search. There are a range of job boards that post both investment roles and roles in companies that that integrate impact and social good. Gin is one website. You can just Google any of these and you'll find them. Next Billion is another. I mentioned the B Corporation world earlier. Aspen Network of Development Entrepreneurs is set up by the Aspen Institute. That's another great job board. Attending entrepreneurship events, if you, for example, live in DC, you can come to one of our events. If you go to billcap.com, you can see where our events are, but whether it's Eventbrite or Twitter or...
It looks like Ross has lost his connection, so let's give him a few moments to log back in, and we should be back on in just a moment.
I'm back. Sorry about that. Liz, I don't know why I dropped off, but do you know where I was when you lost me?
You were talking about some of the networking activities, attending entrepreneurial events.
Great. Sorry about the blip, folks. So attending entrepreneurial events is a great way to meet entrepreneurs and figure out ways to get involved. And then there are other fellowship programs like the Impact Business Leader Program that I just described. There are a few that I've mentioned here if you want to take notes and Google them, but they're all on-ramps for companies like the ones that I described. And then finally, some people want to know, how can I invest? I work for a venture capital firm. This sounds cool. Where do I learn about these companies? I want to invest my own money, whether it's $5 or $500,000. I want to invest whether it's in public stocks or in direct companies like I talked about. There are events, probably the biggest event to have on your radar to learn about investment options is socialcapitalmarkets.com, which people have called before the Davos for social good. It's in San Francisco every year, and it's a couple thousand people, and I go every year. It's awesome. There are networks, angel investor networks, investment firm networks. I've put the two most prominent here. There's a third one called Tonic that I would look up. just you can Google these and check out more of their websites. And then investment vehicles, if you are talking about closer to how do I invest $25 than $250,000, I would say impact assets is one group that has donor-advised funds where a donor-advised fund is where you could, a lot of people use this concept of a donor-advised fund just to get started. And you could contribute philanthropically and get a tax write-off, I don't know, $1,000, $500 to this vehicle, and then use that to invest in companies. And if you get your money back, you can give it to UVA or reinvest it or whatever. It is charitable at the upfront, but to Matt's question, there are some impact investors who would rather use philanthropic dollars, and a donor-advised fund is a great way you could get started. And impact assets is a site I would go to. Kiva is a site that, raise your hand if you've heard of Kiva. You can go on and make a loan directly to a company or to a microfinance institution. And we have a few of our companies that are raising $25 at a time on Kiva. Calvert is another, Calvert Foundation is another place where you can go and you can invest commercial capital. You can invest $500, $1,000. These are just a few examples, but there are more and more and more ways for you to invest every year, even if $25 is all you can spare. So I'm going to go to questions. Two relevant points of information. One, IBL at UVA, I actually just right before this call got word that they've extended the deadline to the 30th. They are reviewing applications on a rolling basis, and they've gotten about 40 applications so far. So if you're interested, I would act sooner rather than later. But you have the website and Jonathan's email. Again, tell Jonathan Ross sent you if this is a program that you're interested in. To learn more about what we do or to follow up, if you have any questions, I'd love to continue the conversation offline and either answer your question or send you to the right person on my team or partner who would know the answer. So that's how to get in touch with me. I'm going to take a few of these questions, and if you have more questions, go in the chat. I know we end at 1, but I have till about 1:15, and I'm going to try and answer all the questions that we have here. So I'm going to start with Jason. Do you have a preferred hold period for your investments? It's really hard to say. I mean, we do some debt, some loans that are 6 to 24 months. We have some equity investments that will be 10 years plus. I'd say we're probably we have some investments where we take a share of the revenue, so we'll take 2% of a company's revenue until we get 3x return on investment, and we're probably 60% equity, 40% non-equity. It just totally depends on the company and the kind of capital that they need. Other questions?
Ross, I'm going to pop in for just a quick moment since we're coming up on 1 o'clock. Ross has agreed to stay on for a few more minutes to keep the questions going, so please stay with us if you can. Before we get back to the questions, I would just like to give Ross a big thank you for his very helpful webinar. We really appreciate your sharing your expertise with us today. And I also want to let the audience know that our next Friday forum will take place on January 23rd when we welcome Cache Prescott, who will talk about reinvigorating your career and getting past the job blahs. So we'll get back to Ross now for some more questions. But again, I want to thank you all so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your spending time with us. And as always, we've been recording today's webinar, so everyone who registered will receive a link to the recording later today in an email. And also, please remember to complete the Friday Forum survey. So now back to Ross for some more questions. Thank you.
So Liz in Albemarle says, some companies choose to hire mostly part-time employees to avoid paying benefits. Your view on this practice, would you invest? So short answer is no. I think the more complicated answer is that with a startup, when you don't have that much cash, you have a lot of people working below market salaries and have a share in equity. But I do think one of the things that we talk about with all of our companies is workforce practices are critically important. So, for example, we at Village Capital, and we encourage our employees to do this as well, have student loan forgiveness as an employee benefit, because a lot of people don't mind taking a pay cut to work for a startup whose mission they believe in, believing that they'll reach financial success one day, but they've got this student loan payment that isn't going to change despite what they do in their day job. So being able to recognize that and include that as an employee benefit to us has totally expanded the types of people that we can attract, and I think it's important for any startup. So recognizing that it's much more complicated in practice, if a company intentionally chose to hire part-time employees to avoid paying benefits, I would not invest. And for all of our companies, even if they can't afford great benefits today, I think we view impact as an employer as important as the impact of what your company is doing. So I'd want to see a good plan for that if we were talking about investing. Matt, our most impact investors, nonprofit foundations who don't need market returns or returns expected from traditional private equity. I think that's probably the biggest myth of impact investing. There are over 300 tagged impact investors according to JP Morgan, and fewer than 10% of them are nonprofit foundations. So most impact investors are looking for financial returns and positive financial returns that would make investors happy. And I think that we actually see a lot of companies fall victim to this myth. So they'll go out and they'll say, I have a startup and no, you know, we don't have a clear vision of what financial success looks like, but we are an impact investment and you should invest in us because of the impact that we're doing. And the problem when this happens is that most impact investors are not nonprofit foundations, and most impact investors hear that and they think that impact companies that think about impact are in some ways like second degree citizens and not as good as the real, you know, Tinder or WhatsApp or whatever is out there. And so I think it's really important for both investors and companies to take financial returns seriously. Thank you to all of you who said thank you. I would love to open, I think I've gone through all the questions. I'd love to open it up to other questions if you've got them.
I see at least one person typing.
All right. So I think a recording of the presentation has been sent. If all of you, if you send me an email, I can also send you a copy of the slide deck. And you're
Mary Ann is actually going to include a copy when she sends the link out later today.
Oh, good. That is less work for me. That is outstanding. Other questions? I see a couple. Are there any other on-ramps like the UVA IBL program that place you in these sort of roles but do so domestically? I noticed a lot of the placements are out of the U.S. So UVA IBL is, there are global opportunities, but most of the placements coming out of UVA IBL are going to be in the U.S. We actually created it specifically because most of the other programs, I think most of the other programs are great at emerging market placements, and U.S. placements are less good. And there's real demand from people who want to get into this kind of work to work in the U.S. So UVA IBL does have a very active U.S. focus. In terms of other programs, I would look into potentially Venture for America. I don't know if they are just for people right out of college, though. But I would Google that. those are the two best ideas I have. Yes, I second that. So Lisa, Acumen Plus Leadership Courses. If you like what you hear today and want to learn more, Acumen is an impact investment firm also started by a UVA alum named Jacqueline Novogratz. And they do have some really good courses on their website, and I think it's just acumen.org.
Well, Ross, I think that's all. I don't see any more questions coming. So we'd like to thank everyone again from Alumni Career Services here at Alumni Hall. And again, we welcome you to join us again January 23rd for our next Friday forum. So thank you so much. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, everyone who joined us today.
Other question.
Oh, one more question. Okay.
So what has been your involvement in Brazil? We have run a couple of training programs for entrepreneurs with a great group called Artemisia that's out of Sao Paulo. We also know a group called PIPA in Rio. And there's actually a guy, Elliot Rosenberg, who's a UVA alum who started a eco-tour, like a sustainable tourism social enterprise in Rio. I don't know if you know him, but I'm happy to share more. All of our work in Brazil has been in partnership with this firm, Artemisia, though. All right. Thank you all. I wish it were logistically possible for this to be a voice-to-voice conversation, but at least between your chats, this has been a really great time.
Thanks again to everybody who joined us today.
We hope you have a great weekend,
and we look forward to seeing you back on January 23rd. Thanks again.